You're listening to the Untaming podcast.
Rewild the Child.
Here is your host, Emily.
Hello, welcome to episode 20 of the Untaming podcast. Wow, 20 episodes. So last week's episode with Robin was such an intensely deep-rooted episode that I highly recommend you going back and listening to it if you haven't already. That's one that will be of benefit to literally anybody. I even had a listener send me a message to say that she enjoyed it so much she immediately bought his book. Today's episode is with another return guest, Nadine Artemis. When I spoke to her last year, we talked about the effects of the sun on the body. This year, we talked about the contents of her book, Holistic Dental Care. There are a few things I realised afterwards that we didn't touch on, so I've gone through her book to find the answers and share them here for you in case you intend to use this episode as a future resource to come back to. So Nadine recommends brushing twice a day or every 12 hours. In this episode, she gives her 8 steps for successful self-dentistry. I have been using these steps for close to a year now, and they get my teeth so clean, far cleaner than they used to the regular way, that I often find myself going 24 hours, even sometimes as long as 48 hours before I begin to feel like I need to go through the self-dentistry steps again. Another point to make is that with kids, like with anything, you don't want to force it, follow their lead to allow it to be a fun activity for them. Like brushing teeth in the bath can be fun. Ultimately, the biggest concern is that they're eating a nutrient-dense diet. So as long as your focus is on that, don't stress about the brushing because its effectiveness is secondary. So the following are all direct quotes from her book. It is better to use a dry toothbrush than a wet one. Gently stroking your teeth with a dry toothbrush and rinsing thoroughly will remove more bacteria and plaque than using a wet brush with regular toothpaste. It is less than ideal to brush your teeth right after a meal. If you brush too soon after eating, the saliva will not have time to recalibrate to its slightly alkaline level of pH 7. Contrary to marketing madness, tooth decay is not caused by fluoride deficiency. Even the US Environmental Protection Agency has fluoride on its substantial evidence of neurotoxicity list. Fluoride appears to interfere with critical bodily chemistry, damaging gums, disrupting collagen production, and resulting enzyme activity. Fluoride accumulates in the body, especially in the pineal gland. It lowers IQ, forms deposits in the brain related to Alzheimer's, promotes early onset puberty, and the list goes on. I'm currently reading Arthur Haynes' book, A New Path. Wow, I'm not even a third of the way into it, but it already goes to the top of my list of favourite books ever. There were a couple of things I read in A New Path that I thought I should share with you here. Here's what he has to say on fluoride. We drink fluoridated water, even though fluoride is a cumulative central nervous system toxin. The first thing to consider about fluoridated water is that when imbibing water, it passes over the teeth quickly and does not provide much opportunity for fluoride to protect against demineralization by forming a veneer over the enamel. Clearly, it would be better to keep the fluoride in the oral cavity for a longer period of time if one was so inclined to use this chemical. Second, it does not prevent cavities, rather it merely slows the process down. Cavities are caused by a poor diet, especially one that is rich in refined carbohydrates that feed pathogenic bacteria who produce organic acids that demineralize tooth material. Third, there is no benefit whatsoever conferred from consuming fluoride. In fact, there is much detriment from this practice. And here is his conclusion from his section on vitamin D. When it comes to food forms of vitamin D, while both are helpful, the animal food forms are more potent, are stored more easily in the body, and converted to the hormone form of vitamin D the fastest. However, the form of vitamin D made from the sun is different and plays other roles in the body. We need both forms, so vitamin D from food and from sunlight, to be optimally healthy. Here's a quick message from our sponsor. The next episode to come out on the 9th of August is with Gail Tully, the founder of Spinning Babies. If you haven't heard of Spinning Babies, it's my number one recommendation for any parents to be, as it offers a plethora of exercises to help realign your body after a lifetime of damaging movements from domesticated living, and therefore it helps with positioning of the baby. But for now, here is Nadine Artemis. Nadine Artemis lives in Ontario, Canada with her life partner Ron and their son Leif. Nadine Artemis is an innovative aromacologist. She develops immune-enhancing formulas and medicinal blends for health and wellness. She is the creator of Living Libations, an exquisite line of serums and elixirs for those seeking the purest botanical health products on the planet. Nadine holds a degree in women's studies and her thesis was on the female orgasm. Nadine has published multiple books on dental health and also a book titled Renegade Beauty. Last night she had about 8 hours of sleep, and for lunch today she had a calzone made with yams as the dough with some fresh sprouts. Nadine, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
So first off, thank you for your advice on how to cope with sun exposure here in New Zealand, where we have, you know, the hole in the ozone layer above us. I admit I was a little bit skeptical that the way to alleviate getting sunburnt was allowing your skin
get more sun.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you say in the winter when the sun is further away? And fortunately, I've got, you know, kids and dogs who don't care about the weather, so it made it pretty easy to get even just an hour or two of outside time in every day. And so by the time New Zealand summer came around, even though we were getting 8 to 10 hours a day outside by then, both my kids and I had all developed an adequate base tan, so none of us got sunburnt during the summer.
Yay!
Yeah. Like I used a natural sunscreen on us a handful of times, mm-hmm. but that was it. And in my 30 years, I've never had that sort of success with New Zealand sun.
That's so good. Yeah. And now you're all happier and healthier for it.
Exactly.
That's great.
Really goes to show how much we need that adequate year-round outside time to help our skin cope with the sun. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. My pleasure.
Okay, before we start talking about dental health, can we do a quick recap with some questions I received after your last episode?
Absolutely.
Okay, so with regular sunscreen being a known carcinogenic, in New Zealand, it's kind of heavily credited with the rates of skin cancer dropping. Do you have anything to say about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I do. And in my book, Renegade Beauty, I have a whole chapter in there and I go into all of the medical studies and everything. So, you know, I don't have them always at the top of my head, but like I really go into the science of it. There's a couple of articles online too. But what those studies show is that, you know, the closer you live to the equator, the more recreational sun exposure you get, for example, the less case of melanoma that you have. And when the Cochrane Review, which reviews medical studies and then kind of collates them, found, and I'm generalizing here, but the more sunscreen use equals the more skin cancer and the more freckling and moles.
Ah, right.
Yeah, because what happens is sunscreen divides the rays, so you're only receiving UVA. You're not getting the benefit of them together and the benefit of the UVB, which is the vitamin D generator. Mm-hmm. And then you're just solely getting UVA, which is more of the damaging ray on its own. It's kind of like if you sat in front of glass the whole time, because the glass would filter out the UVB. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people see this if they're like, let's say there's a truck driver. So he's regular arm in that sunny window, right? Yeah. Hours a day, that arm will be more freckled than the other arm.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so another question I have here is we kind of briefly talked about cradle cap. So is it mm-hmm. is this a relatively new phenomenon? Like the common belief seems to be that it has been around for as long as humans have existed, but perhaps not.
Yeah, that I don't have stats on that. However, you can you can read about it in early, you know, in a lot of the early herbal books and the sort of folklore remedies in those earlier European. They always had remedies for cradle cap, so I think it's been around for a while.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and you also made a comment in your episode about a possible link between cradle cap and antibiotic use by the grandmother. Can you expand on that further?
Oh, I didn't collate the two, but maybe I was talking fast. However, we are affected. Our microbiome will be affected by antibiotics that our mother took. I mean, sorry, that our grandmother took and our mother took, of course. Mm-hmm. Not saying it has a direct relation to cradle cap, though.
I see.
But it will affect our whole, you know, it may be, you know, there's a missing species that we're born with or that we're not born with or something like that. But it's definitely prevalent and it's, you know, passed along, especially because we do inherit the matrilineal genome and the matrilineal microbiome.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay. So I read your holistic dental health book last year and to be honest, I said this to you before we started recording, but I thought it would be the sort of book that I would just skim. But once I started, I found it really held my attention because you got right to the point. There was no waffling, and I ended up reading it cover to cover. I learned so much from it. I wondered, could we start with you telling us about the purpose of saliva?
Yeah, so the saliva is like kind of like this beautiful ocean for our mouths. It's a saline fluid and it really nurtures each tooth. So we want to have, you know, ample saliva. We want to have all the great minerals and we want to have the right alkalinity to our saliva. And then they just, you know, throughout the day, bathe the teeth, send minerals to the teeth. And then they also coalesce. The saliva coalesces with this microscopic liquid that comes out onto the tooth surface like microscopic sweat. Mm-hmm. And this is part of the dentineal lymphatic fluid. We have a dentineal lymphatic system. We have a tooth lymph system basically, which is not something that, you know, a lot of dentists know. The more modern and you know, self-study, like dentists that have gone beyond and questioned what they learn in dental school. But there's really great research. There was thousands of studies done by Dr. Steinman and Dr. Lenore. And first it was Dr. Steinman because he was a dentist. And for, you know, in the month of August every year, he had such bad allergies. He had to close down his practice. This is in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. And so he reads about like eliminating, this must have been pretty radical back then, all the white foods, like the white bread and white sugar and stuff.
Yeah.
And he got better. He was really understanding how diet is related to health. Mm-hmm. And he really always felt like that, you know, there was a systemic connection to the teeth and the body. But, and this is the 50s. So right around, it was the 1940s where the Dental Association really decided that it was going to be they had a meeting and were like, it's going to be the acidogenic theory of decay. That's what they were deciding on. Because there was a history of the teeth being systemically connected to the body, but that was kind of like let go in that moment. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of a pivotal moment. And then it was this acidogenic theory, which is that sugar and acids on the teeth, they create decay. But this all made him understand, you know, a lot of different things. He got rid of his asthma and allergies. And so then he actually stopped practicing and fully studied teeth. And so he was part of a research university. And what he discovered was that when we chew substrate, the substrates in the nutrients in the food create a chemical reaction, communicate with the hypothalamus, and the hypothalamus then releases a cascade of different chemical messengers, which activate the parotid glands in the mouth and throughout the body. And they activate the nutrients and this dentineal lymph system. And so that travels up. Then by the time these nutrients, so, you know, you're digesting, it's going through the digestive system and then it's coming back up into the mouth and into the tooth to nourish the tooth and give it the vitamins and minerals that bone and that tooth need. So when the blood travels up and then you're at the teeth roots and then it's traveling inside into the pulp chamber, at that point, it changes into a clear lymphatic liquid. Mm-hmm. That is then goes through the odontoblasts, which are like little kind of pumps and little pistons. That is what transports this microscopic sweat, so to speak, onto the surface of the tooth, where then it's coalescing with the saliva. And this is what delivers all the nutrients to the teeth. So the teeth are like trees in a way, with a root system drawing up nutrients as the tree roots do up into the trunk and the trees. And so that's the same system in our mouth. And this is key. And we need those, the nutrients, to do the chemical messaging in the body for all this to happen. However, if there is lack of nutrients, a high sugar diet, not necessarily because the sugar is sitting on the teeth, but because sugar is, you know, wreaking havoc with the blood sugar levels. So we need minerals, we need a balanced blood sugar, we need balanced hormones, and not like having exposure to chemicals. So if those things, those kind of body cell stressors happen, what happens to this dentineal lymph system is that it actually stagnates. And then we're no longer bringing up nutrients into the tooth. So the system's kind of faltering. And that's sort of phase one. And then what can further happen if you don't turn things around is then that centrifugal force that is bringing nutrients up into the tooth actually reverses. And then the tooth becomes like a straw, and it draws in, it sucks in viruses and bacteria and fungus from inside the mouth environment. And that is the genesis of a cavity. That is how a cavity is formed. And a cavity is really just an infection in the tooth.
So is this the process that you talked about in your book called fluid flow reversal?
Yes, yes. And I kind of nicknamed the whole system the invisible toothbrush, because that's actually what's cleansing our teeth.
Well, my biggest takeaway from your book was reading about this and learning about the blue dye experiment. Could you talk about that?
Yeah. And so that was part of the studies with Dr. Steinman, who I was speaking of. And yeah, I mean, all these things, you know, they all do it on rats and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, that's how we're learning. That's a topic for another day. But yeah. Anyway, so, and apparently they have some kind of teeth cycle like we do. So anyway, so they use the X-ray dye to understand the trace of nutrients. And so that's how they were really able to prove the existence of the dentineal lymph system. And it actually just takes a few minutes to go through the whole digestive system and up to the tooth. But that process of the fluid moving from the tooth root out onto the tooth actually takes an hour. So I just find that interesting. I don't really know where all that's going. I just always find that really neat. So it goes through the whole body in a few minutes, but then that last stage is like about an hour. So they did countless of studies, and then he was doing all this and was proving it. But he didn't know what the mechanism was in the body. So that's when he started to think about the endocrine system, because really at the end of the day, it always seems to go back to the activity of the hypothalamus. And so that's when he partnered up with an endocrine doctor, Dr. Leonor, and then they, you know, combined their powers. And that's when they really understood the whole endocrine system part of it.
How does this affect the color of your teeth? Like people often put things directly onto their teeth to try and whiten them. But is that even doing anything, or... like, yeah. And what's the composition of the tooth there?
Yeah. Well, for sure, there's like polishing your teeth and, you know, getting rid of that sort of daily buildup of plaque. And then what can happen for a lot of people is the plaque, if there's a buildup of plaque, because again, your teeth may feel pretty clean, but there could be like a deeper layer of plaque building up if you haven't had them deeply cleaned in a while or had a good at-home routine. And so what can happen is the plaque can also get discolored. That's that sort of like red wine phenomenon. You know, obviously it's going to be worse if you haven't brushed your teeth. So there's kind of a buildup like that of discoloration. So one thing to solve that is if you're seeing a holistic dentist, they'll often have a salt blast, and they can kind of blast your teeth with a salt solution. And it's kind of like, you know, when they restore older buildings, I remember seeing that in Europe a lot, where they have these sort of like hoses that sandblast.
Yeah.
And that's what the salt can do naturally with the dentist and the dentist tool. So it's totally natural, non-invasive. And if like do that first, and you'll see how clean your teeth can get. But what people don't understand, especially when they're bleaching, is, you know, because that's damaging the enamel. And then you're really creating a vicious cycle, because then the teeth are going to get yellower and you're going to be like bleaching and yellowing, and it's not good for the enamel over a lifetime. And what that whole concept misses is that the enamel is actually transparent. And so it's like a window, and it's the health of the tooth underneath that gives it the healthy, you know, like a, like it's sort of how juicy your teeth are in nutrients. Now, of course, also there's genetic kind of colors to teeth and that kind of stuff as well, but it's the health of your tooth that is reflected out. So when you, when there's people that are missing a lot of nutrients, like a lot of fat soluble vitamins, you know how you can see, you may have seen like gray or glassy teeth.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what you can see when people are missing some key nutrients sometimes. And it's kind of a good example of how the whiteness really is coming from within.
Mm.
But that, you know, but again, there's still, you know, using baking soda and charcoal, hydrogen peroxide at 3% just once or twice a month, or combining the hydrogen peroxide with baking soda, all of those things are going to give you a nice enough white.
Yeah, so it's really the actual brushing of your teeth to keep them clean and white is secondary to the food and drink that you consume. Is that right?
Yeah, it's really, again, with our teeth, we want to always go, you know, think of it inside out.
Yeah. I haven't used regular toothpaste since I read your book. You dedicated an entire chapter to their ingredients.
Yeah.
But I wonder if you could you give us a brief rundown on, well, why we basically don't want to be putting a lot of the commonly used toothpaste ingredients on our skin, let alone inside our mouths?
Yeah, and that really is, like, I do recommend that people just stop using any kind of commercial toothpaste. And also we have to question some of the stuff in the health food store as well. And there's so many reasons why. There's the ingredients that can, like sodium lauryl sulfate, which is everything, including Tom's of Maine, which is supposed to be, you know, a more natural toothpaste. But it's, that company's owned by Colgate now or something anyway. So sodium lauryl sulfate can actually create bleeding gums.
Huh.
Mercury fillings can lead to bleeding gums. So, and, you know, there's so many issues, but all generally I can say that, you know, all those kind of ingredients are also messing with the mouth's microbiome. And, you know, I know we know a lot more about the gut microbiome now. Of course, the mouth's microbiome is very inextricably bound to that. There's a big connection there. Obviously, they share the same pathways. And a lot of the dental practices that we do are literally, you know, mutating species of our microbiome, or really just killing some off. Like one, well, there's just mouthwash with the type of alcohol, synthetic alcohol that's used. Mouthwashes create over 37,000 cases of oral cancer a year.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's been studied fully, but, you know, one of my thoughts is it's because that the type of alcohol, that synthetic alcohol, is really mutating the mouse microbiome.
Right.
And the why, we used to think a lot about DNA in the cells. And now in the past decade, we're really like, you know, the microbiome is so key. Like, not only are we billions of cells, but we're billions of bacteria. So we are basically human hosts to a great banquet of bacteria, and we've got to be good hosts to this banquet, and we don't want to kind of stir up any pathogen parties. So there's a fine balance in our mouth, and basically everything that we've been doing in our modern times is messing with that microbiome. And we're no longer, like, you know, out of the 40s and 50s, we, on all levels, we were trying to, like, have this war on germs, and it was just sort of the scorched earth policy when germs came up. And now we're a little bit more wiser, and we're understanding that there's a balance to the bacteria, that we need the beneficial bacteria. They're a part of our immune system, and they're going to help keep pathogens in check. But, you know, those really synthetic toothpaste and some dental procedures and the mouthwashes, the triclosan and the toothpaste, you know, the sodium lauryl sulfate, the mercury fillings, all of that is imbalancing that bacteria in our mouth. And so then what's happening is we're allowing the pathogens to gain more traction and to create more biofilms. So It's like not just that the ingredients are, you know, synthetic and we don't want methylparabens in our body. And now we're learning about, you know, how synthetics affect our endocrine, our hormone system and our liver. But really the kind of more emergency is that microbiome. And that's what we need to protect and seal and then kind of reseed. So I think of it in three steps to elevate our oral ecology. One is to stop. So we want to stop, you know, using these synthetic toothpaste. We want to stop spikes in our blood sugar. We want to look at, you know, the foods we're eating. And then we want to be able to seal and heal the gums and the mouth. Because basically bleeding gums, that's like a leaky gum. We want to not create an environment where, you know, cavities would be more prevalent. And so we really want to take care of those gums, take care of any receding gum pockets. And, you know, that's where we can swish with the mouth with like things like magnesium or baking soda or salt, which is alkalinizing. Mm-hmm. We can use botanicals for healing and regenerating the gums. There's like oils you can use. We make a lot of dental serums and I also have recipes in my book to make your own. So, you know, serums like sea buckthorn, frankincense, myrrh, ozonated gels, and then we talked about ways that you can whiten naturally. What's really neat with all these botanicals and why we make dental serums with them is because they're also quorum sensing inhibitors, which, of course, what does that mean? quorum sensing is how pathogens communicate. So when pathogens are gaining traction and they are quorum sensing, it means they're trying to, you know, then they're starting to like, hey, you pathogen over there. And they start gathering in numbers and creating those biofilms. So what ingredients are beautiful plants like neem and cardamom, tea tree, frankincense, clove, cinnamon, peppermint, mastic, all of these beautiful plants that we've been using for thousands of years. Now we know that they're actually also all quorum sensing inhibitors. So essential oils like this, if they're pure, they're able to clean up the pathogens, but still work with the beneficial bacteria. So they're not these sort of indiscriminate assassins like antibiotics.
Right.
They're not just like wiping it all out. They're like, okay, we're going to tidy up that and we're going to work harmoniously over here. And also same with things like hydrogen peroxide or iodine. There's like a white iodine that's also really good. So we're able to deal with the microbes, but without wiping out the beneficial bacteria. So that's key in the journey to heal the mouth.
And what are the features to look for in a toothbrush?
Well, you know, you just want to have a soft bristle. Everybody needs soft. Nobody needs medium to firm. And you really most people are brushing too hard. So you want to brush from gum, you know, gum towards the tooth. And you want to lift off. So you're not going back and forth, because the gum line where the teeth and the gum join is so precious and it can recede quickly and gum pockets can build up and food can get stuck in there and then they start receding. So instead of like, I think of the gums like a nice turtleneck around the teeth. Mm-hmm. And when they start receding, you know, you're going to a V-neck and then a cowl neck and then all that stuff's building up in there like biofilms and plaque, and then that tooth part's getting exposed now, and then that part doesn't have the same kind of enamel because it was never meant to be exposed, and then, you know, there could be issues with gum line cavities and that sort of thing. So yeah.
And how frequently should we be replacing our toothbrushes?
You want to do it like every 6 months and keep it clean with hydrogen peroxide. So even every night, you could just dip it into a little fresh bit of hydrogen peroxide, like in a little shot glass, and then throw that out in the morning and rinse it. Because it really, also, if you are dealing with something and there is a bacteria in your mouth that you're trying to clear out, I mean, you know, it can just be a vicious cycle as well if you're not keeping a clean brush.
Yeah. You gave an excellent summary on Weston Price's work and findings in your book. I wonder if you could offer a brief description of it for the listeners?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're indebted to him for so much. But one of the really important things that came out of his work, and he was in the 1930s, he was the president of the ADA, the American Dental Association. Mm-hmm. And he traveled around the world sort of Indiana Jones style with his wife, and they visited remote cultures to study skulls and living and dead and twins and, you know, different sets of teeth. And they discovered so much. I just also was reminded of his son died of a root canal. Mm. Yeah. And then he studied root canals, and he did this study with root canals in rabbits and saw that the disease got transported and stuff. So he was forever trying to figure out the root canal situation because of the death of his son as well. So that was a whole other legacy of his work. But the main thing we learned about nutrients from him was that we need, he didn't know it at the time, but it's like he called it the X factor. And now we know that's vitamin K2 and D3. And so these two fat soluble vitamins combined, and they kind of need to be together. What they do is they have this action that ushers minerals into the bones, which is very important, because if it's the minerals aren't going into our bones, then it floats around in the blood serum, and then we get calcium deposits in other ways. So we want to drive it into the bones, and they're so key for mineral health. So it was through his work, and there was also other work on vitamin D at the time. And what they found was that with proper supplementation, they were doing things like cod liver oil, that cavities would cease and even begin to reverse.
Wow. What are some basic nutritional guidelines to follow?
Yeah, there's a lot there. So definitely you want to get your fat soluble vitamins, vitamin K2 and D3. So sunshine, and then any product, if you're eating eggs or butter or meat, all of that has to be free range, like absolutely, because the K2 is created from the, you know, chicken grazing on the grass or the cow eating the grass. And then the milk has the vitamin K2. So he studied cultures, Dr. Weston Price, in Switzerland. And it was, you know, he studied one ski town, I think it was St. Moritz, that was already built up and already touristy, and everybody had bad teeth. And then he went to like another little village that never got touristy, and the cows were still grazing up the side of the mountain in June, and they were getting that early grass, and they were eating like sourdough bread and cultured butter, and, you know, they all had really great teeth. In short. But see, right now we're just like a whole society that's eating food grown in the shadows of factory farming and pesticides. And even pesticides change the photosynthesis of plants. It's like the shadow on them. And then, you know, if you're eating an egg from a factory farmed chicken, it just doesn't have the K2. Mm. So that's very important. And then if you're a vegan, it's very important to get those vitamins, and luckily all vitamin K, well, not all, but most vitamin K2 supplements are made from annatto, which is a fermented soy.
Oh, yeah.
So that's really important. And and that will also help prevent those gray or glassy teeth. Mm-hmm. And so that's key. Another thing that's key is to not eat anti-nutrients like phytic acid.
Yeah.
So if there is grains or legumes being consumed, we really have to look at traditional methods of soaking and fermenting and sprouting. Mm-hmm. Because the phytic acid is literally an anti-nutrient that pulls phosphorus from the body, and phosphorus is really key for tooth health. So that's important. And you know, that's where if you're vegetarian or a vegan, that could end up, like, that could be a problem with the amount of phytic acid be consumed. If it's like kind of oats for breakfast, lentils for lunch, and rice for dinner, down the road, that could lead to some, you know, weakening of the bone situation.
One of my biggest lessons from Weston Price's work was understanding the connection between the prenatal nutritional supply for mm-hmm. both parents and the future dental health and facial structure of the child. And along with that, how significant birth spacing can be for the dental health of the younger child. Can you flesh those out for us a bit?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and I've seen that in other work too. It's very important for, you know, I did a project in midwifery, on midwifery when I was at university. So I was probably like 19 or 20 at the time. Mm-hmm. And then I don't, that was just sort of like, I was like, and also being that age, I was like, oh, I actually will have a child one day. Because of course, as a teenager, I mean, generally you're just thinking about yourself and you're like, oh my God, I'm not going to have kids. You know, so all that kind of came at the same moment, but I was like, okay, I will. And sort of for that moment, I also was like, okay, it's time to prepare the body. So I did for a long time. So kind of the moment you know you're going to reproduce another human being, like that's the time to really start prepping if you can. If you can, and it's just on shorter notice, obviously, even if you really focus on a lot of nutrients 6 months beforehand for both the mother and the father. Yeah. And of course, so maybe you didn't know beforehand, but now you're pregnant and you know, you really want to, you know, figure out what your body's needing for nutrients and what's going to take you through, you know, birthing and breastfeeding and all of that. Cause your body is giving a lot, and breastfeeding will also be, you know, providing a lot of nutrients for your child. And that's why you need the baby spacing to regenerate the body. Mm. Cause you really give it all, you know, especially if you're breastfeeding for a couple of years or longer.
You weren't eating properly until you already found out you were pregnant. And then so you're concerned about, you know, your child's future facial structure. Is there something that can be done once the baby is born, like chewing on harder foods or breastfeeding? Will they help to do it, or has it kind of already been set?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. So then, you know, and then baby and you're breastfeeding, and then, you know, they're getting ghee and probiotics and nutrients and sun and the fat-soluble vitamins, and then you're breastfeeding and you're eating all of that too, you'll be fine, you know. That you'll still have a chance for it to all develop. But the there is a lot of development, obviously, in utero for the adult teeth.
And okay, so we were talking, you mentioned dental cavities and fillings. Is it really possible to heal and even reverse cavities?
It completely is. And it's you know, many dentists know this and see this, and it's been written about a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the dentist can even check, because there's active cavities and then inactive. So once the cavities stopped, it's actually harder. It's kind of like if a tree gets damaged and then it repairs itself, that area is a bit stronger afterwards. Mm. It doesn't always clear up in color, but it can literally just be solid and never, you know, become. So it's when it's soft and mushy, that's when it's an active cavity. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you can just heal it. I've had many people heal, solidify, reverse cavities. And you've just got to do it by, you know, inside and outside. So by outside, I mean brushing and keeping the saliva alkaline, and then inside through diet and nutrients. Because really, if there is a cavity, you know, it's more of an internal issue with nutrients than it is about, oh, you didn't brush your teeth enough.
Yeah. And what about root canals? You mentioned in your book how it's impossible for a dentist to decontaminate the inside of the tooth before filling it. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah. And I just want to say also with cavity reversal, like I'm saying this now, but obviously if you want to go into it, you know, there are resources, or read the book so you really understand how you want to approach it.
Yeah.
And yeah, so root canals are a bit of an issue. And the idea of a root canal is that it's a procedure for an infected tooth. Mm-hmm. And then it kills that tooth by removing the internal structure. So we talked about that pulp chamber before in the middle of the tooth, and that gets all cleansed out of the tooth. So the nerves and the pulp tissue and the blood vessels get taken out, and the hollow tooth is rinsed and then filled with like a latex cement and then topped with a crown. So the purpose, the idea of a root canal is to just hermetically seal that tooth and save the chewing surface. So that's the concept. And so it seems kind of like a good idea, because you still have like your kind of a real tooth in that place. But clinically, it's a bacterial horror story. And it's not just some of the time, it's like 101% of the time. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is that now a dead tooth remains in your mouth as an incubator of infection. And it basically becomes this bacterial breeding ground that for pathogens to grow and spread. Then this area is completely oxygen starved, stagnant tooth becomes this like haven for microbes. So really the purpose, like the thought of having this non-infected sterile tooth in the mouth is the goal, but the exact opposite is created. And it's impossible to sterilize, as you've just mentioned, because each tooth contains 3 miles of microscopic dentin tubules. Isn't that crazy? The body is.
Wow.
And you know, every time I say that, like literally, and I say it quite a bit in interviews, I'm always like, no, it's got to be 3 meters, like in my head. I'm like, no, it's 3 miles because it's so long, like 3 miles.
Wow.
So then each time you're chewing with that root canal tooth, or, you know, little bacterial toxins get squirted into the bloodstream and, you know, spread around, and then the nerve tissue, like it's just like a whole mess. And there's even, and it won't show up, you know, because the nerves are gone too. So it's just like this silent infection. And there's a physician in Europe who's been working with cancer patients for 40 years, Dr. Joseph Isles, and he found that 98% of his patients had root canals, and he insisted that his patients remove all the root canal teeth before he started doing his treatment. So just to say, though, it doesn't mean that if you have a root canal that you will get cancer. He's just finding people that had it also had a root canal. And there's other studies that show that root canals are found on the same side as women that if they have breast cancer.
Whoa. So I guess that correlation is because of the compromised immune system, right?
Yeah, well, it's also just squirting the bacteria into the bloodstream. And then you can see, so, you know, thermography, which is heat sensing photography that they're doing to see where inflammation is in the body, and specifically with breast tissue. There's a lot of thermography for breasts because it's an alternative to a mammogram, mm-hmm. which is a whole other podcast. And and so you can see the heat signature lines in the breast, and you're like, oh, well, we didn't detect a lump, but look, there's this whole heat area, so something could be developing. When they do the thermography of the head to the breast, you can see lines of heat going from a root canal tooth to the breast.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, and then one of my favorite dentists in Texas, and if anybody, well, people fly in all over the world to see him. So do I, but if you're in Texas, you're really lucky. Dr. Stuart Nunnally. So what he wanted to do, independent study on root canal teeth. And so to qualify for the study, the root canal teeth that people had to be perfect and symptom-free and show zero signs of any pathology on an x-ray. So that's the teeth that had to qualify. Mm-hmm. And so they extracted those teeth and sent them for independent testing. And 100% of those root canal teeth, even though they were textbook perfect on surface inspection, they all harbored severe toxic pathogens.
Whoa.
Yes. So if you have a root canal, and obviously this information was not fun to hear, it's important to know that although root canals can become focal infections that feed anaerobic bacteria, not all root canals are causing systemic health issues, because it just depends on an individual's epigenetics and how, and everybody's handling toxicity differently. However, if you are experiencing a decline in your health or an autoimmune issue, then one of the first things you would want to do is like go to a biological dentist that knows their stuff and explore having the root canal tooth extracted. But what's also very important is to not run out and just have anybody remove your root canal, or anybody just quickly remove your mercury filling, because there are protocols. And it's very important when a tooth is extracted that the periodontal ligament is also removed. So if you must check that your dentist knows about this and will do this and sees the value in it, because what we now know is if that's not removed, and it isn't removed in most extractions. So like a common wisdom tooth extraction will not have this. So if for a reason you do need a root canal out, even though 67% of all root canal removals are not needed, and we do need those teeth, because again, like Weston Price, right? We need we actually want to have room for all those teeth in our jaw. We weren't born with like throwaway teeth. Like, it's like, you know, there was a design to it all. So, you'll want to make sure the periodontal ligament's removed. And if you don't, what happens is the gum grows over and then that rots. And then like decades later, you have jaw cavitations, which is a whole other horror story, but, but literally it's a huge thing. And, it's 90% of people that have had an extraction have a jaw cavitation lingering underneath, which is just the same bacterial horror story as a root canal.
Right.
However, it's easy because the tooth's already gone. So when you, and again, it's got to be with a dentist that knows this kind of stuff. They just slip in a dental tool, and if it sinks in, they'll also know it's mushy. Mm-hmm. Because also a jaw cavitation won't show up on an X-ray till it's about 80% developed. So you don't want to wait for that either. So they'll, so then if the, if it is mushy in there, then they will open it up a bit, scrape out the decay, which then brings a blood clot to the area, which then flushes out further bacteria. Then, any good dentist should also be doing, ozone injections and then plasma injections with your own plasma to really regenerate the area, call your body's stem cells to the area. And then that's cleaned out. So if you have had removal at some point, you're going to want to see a dentist to have those areas checked. Mm-hmm. And obviously with your, if a root canal is being removed, you want to have the same care done with the, you know, the area should be flushed with ozone and plasma injected. And you really can, you can leave the space. Hopefully you don't have to do that too much, but if there's a back molar on one side, you can just take out that tooth and leave it. You do not need an implant or a bridge. Of course, if it's a front tooth, you know, you're going to have to think a bit more. The bridges are a bit of an issue because it's going to shave off healthy tooth on either side. And then implants, you don't want to see a dentist that is using titanium. If they're using titanium, it's just not a good dentist. If the dentist is still doing root canals, run. Because the dentist, if they know what's going on, they will literally not ever do a root canal. Because they, once you know the truth of it, you just, you couldn't do it anymore. And so, yeah, you got to make sure that the dentist is doing that. And you also want to make sure if you're getting mercury removed, that the dentist office isn't then also putting mercury in people either. Because that's just silly. So really, you know, ask your dentist questions. In my book, Holistic Dental Care, and also on our website, we have questions to ask prospective dentists.
Oh, great.
And that's really important. But oh, I was going to say, if you need an implant, the only option is zirconium. Because you're putting foreign objects into the body, so at some level, the immune system's going to just not be happy with any of it. But the zirconium seems to be the most inert.
Right. Well, that's good to know. Can you regenerate receding gums?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if the dentist has said you've got like a 6, 7, 9, you can bring them back down to a 2 or a 3. Mm-hmm. You'll want to for sure follow the steps in the book, and I've got it in Holistic Dental Care, and then there's also a really hearty dental chapter in Renegade Beauty that will also have the steps. So either one. And and we also have these syringes that are blunt, like a blunt tip syringe, and you would put the dental serums inside and you would start flushing out the gum lines as well. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, brushing properly. I have these 8 steps that anybody can use. You can use it with just baking soda, or of course you can use it with the dental serums we make. But also it's like, if you just ditched your commercial paste and worked with baking soda for the rest of your life, you'd be like a million times better off than using your triclosan, sodium lauryl sulfate, sudsy stuff. So, yeah. But it's important, and you just have to slowly but surely, you know, there's just so many tips in the books for turning around, gums, because it's really important that we keep our gums healthy.
Yeah. I've also jotted down some notes here when I was reading what you had to say about braces, and I've written, is it possible that the nerves in a tooth will die in response to the forces applied to the teeth?
There have been some cases like that, but really, I also have an article on braces. It really just changes the shape of the face. Mm-hmm. And generally, yeah, making it grow vertically, which isn't really what we want. And it's really compelling to see when twins that have had braces and not, because then you can really study face structure. Mm-hmm. There's a really good YouTube. It's an Australian 60 Minutes, so not the American one. And it's an orthodontist. So I don't know, like Australia 60 Minutes orthodontist, maybe that will help you find it on YouTube. And it totally talks about these twins and all the issues with braces and extractions. And it's fascinating. The best way to have straight teeth is through diet, through, you know, pre-pregnancy, during pregnancy, post-pregnancy, like breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. And then obviously getting your kid nutrients. That's going to give them the nutrients that they need to develop, you know, their best possible genetic bone structure. And then the other thing is to prevent mouth breathing in children, because mouth breathing will create the child to grow up with a different face structure. So that's very important.
Yeah. So that's them, what, just breathing out of their mouths rather than out of their noses?
Yeah. So at night, generally. Mm-hmm. That's when you would see it the most. So, you know, it could be a dairy allergy that's making them breathe out of their mouths. It could be they may need osteopathy or something. Like, it could be a structural thing that they may need to, you know, kind of work out. There's lots of different reasons why, but you definitely, it also creates cavities, mouth breathing as well, which can also create, adults don't want to mouth breathe either. But it's sort of some different issues like dry mouth and cavities that start happening, but also just like a decline in health because you're not getting oxygen.
Yeah.
You know, so for adults, there's good dental, there's tape that you can put over your mouth at night to retrain your breathing, which sounds crazy. But when people do it, they're like, oh my God, I'm like so energized and awake. Like people, it's very easy for people to start getting into that good habit because they just wake up like new people.
Yeah. So do the braces, what do they do to like the tooth enamel and the roots of the teeth?
Yeah, well, it's different for different people, but they do cause trauma and they do cause gum trauma. There is, I talk about it in the article, but there's another method called orthotropics, mm-hmm. which is a much better system for aligning the teeth.
Okay.
But seriously, if you take out the mouth breathing and you have good dietary things, the teeth will grow. And sometimes you've got to give the kid a bit of a chance too. Sort of some teeth growing at 9 may look different at 12.
Right.
And so you really just want to keep up with the nutrients.
And okay, so what if you've got somebody who's listening with a teenager who's been told that they need braces? Like, I know of people who use clear aligners. Are these less damaging?
I think those are less damaging than the metal, because also nickel, which is what braces are made of, is so toxic. It's like close to mercury in toxicity.
Oh, wow.
So that's not good on any level. But really, it's the orthotropics that there's a whole society or, you know, a web page, and they've got things all over the world.
Okay.
So cool. I think, and then there's also like myofacial stuff. So a lot of myofacial therapists will do Skype appointments. Mm-hmm. And then you can start, they'll look at how, you know, your jaw and everything is, and then give you mouth exercises and stuff.
Yeah. Now that the listeners have heard all of this, could you share just a couple of good questions for them to ask their child's dentist? I know you said you've got some mm-hmm. on the website, but do you have a mm-hmm. couple of examples?
Yeah. Well, I would first see, does your practice have mercury? Does your practice do root canals? How does your practice do extractions? Do they remove the periodontal ligament? How do they do teeth cleaning? What are all the products they're using? Do they have biocompatible dental materials? Those are all good things to start.
Cool. Okay, so since reading your book, I've been following your 8 steps to self-dentistry. Are you happy to share them with the listeners?
Yeah, sometimes I don't always remember them right off the top of my head. But or like in the right order, because I do them so fluidly now. Yeah. We do have them, and you can post them. I don't know if you do show notes, but we can always post them there as well.
Okay,
But the first thing is swishing with salt water or baking soda water to neutralize and alkalinize the mouth. And that's a really good thing for kids too, because we all know it's like, it's not till a teenager, till they're really like actually brushing every crevice and nook and cranny in their mouths. Mm. So that just helps remove food and substances and really, really helps to alkalinize. And then there's tongue scraping, which is such a good thing to do to help unburden a plaque from your mouth and keep your mouth healthy. And then it's brushing the gums. So you want to kind of think of brushing in two ways. First, it's the gums. So you're not really thinking about the tooth at this stage. You're going right up to where the gum and the cheek kind of join. And you're just lightly, it's lightly, but you're just stimulating, you know, you're hopefully you got, I put a little drop of a dental serum on, and then you're stimulating those gums, massaging them. And then the next phase is to brush. For this, I recommend an electric toothbrush, maybe like a round head, a different shape than the manual one. And then that can get in, like that's when you're really starting about polishing the teeth and the tops of the teeth and everything. That will scrub them. That's great when you can use a dental serum plus a little pinch of baking soda. And we also make some baking soda based toothpaste with botanicals in them. And we have like a charcoal toothpaste and stuff. So at that point, you're really kind of polishing the teeth. And then you're going to floss. And flossing is very important to get the plaque out in between the teeth. But to really upgrade flossing, if you take a drop of a dental serum and slide it along that floss, then you floss. It's so good because then you're delivering those botanicals. I like to think of them as botanical biotics. You know, all those nutrients we talked about that were quorum sensing inhibitors, the neem or the cardamom, frankincense, those oils, you're getting them up in there. And then they're helping to rejuvenate that tiny bit of gum tissue. They're working with the biofilms. They're able to bust through biofilms, and some of them way more effective at busting through a biofilm than an antibiotic, for example. Mm-hmm. And then you're doing that. And you know, if you do it twice, I recommend doing it twice because the second time you'll be like, oh, there's still stuff there. So you do that and then you can do another rinse. And then at that point, it's just if you need to do extra gum care, you do extra gum care. You can take a dental serum. We also have an ozonated dental serum, mm-hmm. and you can massage that along the gums and the gum line. Or if you need to do the syringe also along the gum line and further flush things out, you can do that at that stage. And I believe that completes it, except the extra thing you can do is gum swishing or oil pulling. After you've done all that and the mouth is clean, mm-hmm. then you can put a teaspoon of sesame oil or olive oil or coconut oil, and you swish that in your mouth for 15 minutes and then spit out. And that is the ancient practice of oil pulling, which actually really whitens, helps to detoxify, really helps to turn their mouth around. If you can do it for like a month, I mean, obviously you could do it every day, but if you can really encourage yourself to do it for a month, you will see changes. I mean, people's teeth usually kind of glow after a month of that. And we also make dental swishing serums where we really juice them up with CoQ10 and, you know, myrrh and peppermint and different things like that.
Then that would make your mouth feel nice and fresh and more pimperminty, I guess, afterwards.
So fresh, yeah. And that's a great thing for kids to do too, because again, they're not getting all the crevices for brushing. Yeah. And in my books, or in my second book, in the Renegade Beauty, I have a recipe for some dental butter cups. And so you can make them these little cubes, and you could have little cubes ready in a jar on the bathroom counter for people to oil swish with as well.
Mm-hmm. You've mentioned like baking soda. What actually is baking soda? Isn't it kind of harsh on the mouth?
No, it's sodium bicarbonate, and it's actually produced in the body by the pancreas, and it's also a product of the earth. Mm-hmm. And there's a dental abrasivity rating, and I don't know how, but for some reason people think it's abrasive, but it's actually, I think the rating is about a 6, and a sensitive kind of like a sensitive normal toothpaste is a rating of a 60.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah, it's actually way gentler than most normal toothpaste. Yeah. And it can be used daily. It's great. It's such a great household item, you know, for bathing in, for alkalinizing. You can have a pinch in water in the morning to alkalinize the body and help the pancreas. It's just so good. Mm. You can add it to your shampoo to get rid of like all the polymers and surfactants from commercial shampoos that you may have used previously. Ooh. You could wash your face with it, you know, for a little bit of a scrub. You can wash your bathtub out with it. You know, you can on. And it's really good. Yeah, it really is. So good having a bath with like magnesium iodine and baking soda and some essential oils.
Nice. Yeah, I've been, like I said, I've been following your 8 steps and using the baking soda and everything else. But it's my teeth feel so much cleaner than they ever did with normal toothpaste. Like even 12 hours later, they'd still be feeling nice and fresh.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? Yeah. You know, it's so fun. And the first time I did it, I did it in the morning. We were flying. So it was like one of those really long days, you know, where you fly across the country and you just feel plaquey at the end of it.
Yeah.
But I did it that day and I was like, I don't think my teeth have ever been this clean. So, and it's fun for kids to do. So you just brush, like do all the things I've said. And then at the end of it all, just take a coating of baking soda and you kind of slide it all over the teeth, but you're not brushing it. You're just kind of coating everywhere.
Yeah.
And then you take a tiny amount of apple cider vinegar and then it does this foaming explosion in the mouth, which is so fun for kids. It lifts all this plaque off from the gum line and your teeth are so clean. So the apple cider vinegar is acidic, but baking soda is so alkaline that the sum total is still very alkaline.
Yeah. Oh, great.
And it was a method invented by Dr. Paul Keyes, who was a gum surgeon, and he really wanted to help people prevent gum surgeries, and that's what he found to be a very useful home remedy.
Mm. Well, I will put links in the show notes to the Living Libations website and Instagram page, and also, you know, the resources we've talked about today and your books. Is there anywhere else you recommend people looking to find out more about what we've discussed today?
Yeah, well, we got Instagram, and our site, as you mentioned, also has, like, you know, a lot of interviews and articles as well. And oh, and also just email us, or we also do consults for free, and we'll, you know, ask us any question, like, because again, if we don't know, we'll direct you. So if you need to find a dentist or ask a question, I mean, we're there.
Oh, excellent. Nadine, yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today and share your knowledge with us.
Yeah, it's always so fun.
So this final question I have for us to end on, if the entire world's knowledge was lost and you could only leave one sentence for future generations, what would it be?
I would say read the book of nature. It's all there.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can join the discussions on our Facebook and Instagram pages. To hear more, subscribe for free on the podcast app on your smartphone. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and all of your favorite podcast platforms. If you would like to offer feedback or suggest a guest, email us at untaming.podcast@gmail.com.